Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint. This is Karina Hogan with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before we begin, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which I am broadcasting from. I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which you are taking this broadcast from right across this beautiful country. I'd also like to acknowledge elders past and present and those elders of more recent arrivals. You can catch Let's Talk through your radio at 98.9 FM, online at 98.9fm.com.au or on our app, the 98.9 FM app. You can also stream us, stream our podcast from major platforms such as Spotify and Apple. It's a pleasure to have you here today on Let's Talk. And today you're going to hear from someone who has been instrumental in the education space. Our chat today is linked to a podcast that I've been fortunate enough to be working on called QUT Yarns. Now, you can find this podcast at www.qut.edu.au/about/Indigenous. And in that podcast, you hear from change makers in the education system, from Angela Leach, who we spoke to last week on Let's Talk, to the amazing Wesley Enoch, Taylor Griffin, the engineer. But today you're going to hear from one of those change makers, Lisa Wadigo. She is an associate professor of practice at the QUT Business School. She's a director at her own business, Iscariot Media. She's a co-founder of Indigenous Business Month, also a co-founder of Black Coffee, which you may be familiar with. She's done a whole range of things. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio with me today, Lisa. And before we get started, can I start by asking you who your mob is and where you're from?
My name is Lisa Wadigo. I was born and raised in Brisbane. My mob are from northern New South Wales. We're a big Southsea Islander Aboriginal family. But yeah, Brisbane is my home and it has been for, oh my gosh, 52 years.
52 years.
I can't believe it.
Now, Lisa, what we're talking about today is, your journey through education and becoming this amazing businesswoman that you have become, especially in the First Nations and our community. Can you tell us a little bit about growing up? What was it like?
I always tell a story that I was raised to be a school cleaner. My mum was a school cleaner. We used to spend our school holidays at the school cleaning. I always really liked my favourite part of the cleaning was doing the chalkboards, because you have to wipe the chalkboards and then sometimes we took the chalk home, the leftover bits. So that was very exciting. And then, you know, there'd be random, you know, erasers and pencils and we'd, you know, score a bit. My mum was a career cleaner and that's kind of where I saw myself. I hear about people when they say, oh, my parents raised me to, you know, value education and, you know, and we didn't really have that. Mum and Dad, I think, were probably just, oh, you girls are going okay. You know, there was no kind of ambition for us, which is fine, and I'm not growling or anything. I'm not kind of having a go at them. It was just kind of how it was. So what I think that means is, the way that I think about it or reflect on it, is that it's made me very, I just try stuff. I've never really set out with a specific ambition, like I want to own my own business or I want to do X by whenever, apart from I want to do fun runs, like that's kind of my main ambition these days. But, you know, I've never really set out with a specific, ambition or goal in life. I just kind of like doing things that interest me. And what that's meant has meant I've done lots and lots of different things.
You certainly have.
I've done a lot of stuff, and it's just because I don't get bored, because there's so many awesome things in the world. Our business does a lot of things these days because I'm just interested in lots of different stuff. I just can't believe that you only get this once. It's like, oh, there's so many things to learn, and I really, really love learning. I was never the brightest in the class. I distinctly remember being in primary school, being in the poor reading group. And then I also remember, though, I remember when they taught us how to, I don't know what age this was, but you know how you read across the lines, and then the teacher said, now, when you get to, like, nearly at the end of the line, just flick your eyes to the next line, the first on the left-hand side of the next line. And then I'd be like, and then I could, then I went up a step. And then, and I think I'm a pretty good reader. Like, I read to my kids, you know, we used to read to the kids all the time, and like, I'm quite fluent in reading. And but I remember her showing me that. I mean, I must have been like 10 or 11 or something. So I went from the D group, like, when they still, I don't know if they still do it, but I doubt they do it. You know, they'd all the A kids, the really smart kids were in the top group, and the dumb kids were in the bottom group, that sort of stuff. So I was in the dumb group, well, you know, and I laugh about it now. It's probably educationally problematic, but at the time.
So you said that growing up, you know, you were sort of trained in a sense, inadvertently, to be a school cleaner, right? But was there something along the way there that kind of inspired you, or that you looked at and went, and it kind of piqued your interest a little bit and you went, oh, I don't know, that looks like a fun little direction to take myself in?
I don't know if it was that or if it was just a case of, what's that? And then I went, what's that? And then I went. And so suddenly I was in places that I'd not imagined before, because I kept looking around the corner, just poking my head around the corner. That's my metaphor for it. That's kind of what I think I was doing in my life. I was at school and I got a chance to be in a school play. And then when grade 12 happened, I was then I applied to go to theatre at, it was BCAE then, Brisbane College of Advanced Education, and then which became QUT. And so I started doing theatre, and I had no idea. I had no idea about theatre, but I was like, oh. And then I got in. Can't believe it. And so I was doing theatre for a few years, and then I didn't get a job out of theatre, so then I went and my sister and I were talking a lot about politics. We used to have these massive conversations about politics, and she was doing a course at Griffith. And she was majoring in public policy, and then I went and did that because I was like, oh, that looks interesting. Because I didn't get a theatre job. So it's kind of like all of these little tiny little stepping stones. So I have this background in public policy, have never worked in government, but, you know, I have that. And so I did a Bachelor of Commerce, and then, you know, and I've cleaned toilets, and I've cleaned everything, you know, cleaned the mice. I was a gun cleaner, though. I was good. Not as good as my mum, though.
Yeah, my mum's a gun cleaner as well.
Mum was really good, and
Because the same sort of was for me. My mum always had two or three jobs. And she was a single mum for the majority of my upbringing as well. So, yeah, cleaning was, a big part of our upbringing.
And I think I actually really am drawn to working with some women up north in North Queensland, and, you know, one of them's starting a cleaning business and growing her business, and it's really, for me, that's really exciting. Mm-hmm. It's a grassroots kind of, if you're talking about business, it's one of the businesses where we talk a lot about barriers to entry, and you can be a cleaner. Like, you just need energy and, you know, maybe some, you know, a mop. Sometimes the client has all of the equipment, so you don't even need that. It's just your time and your energy and that kind of thing. So that's why I'm really drawn to cleaning as a business, as a first business, as a first step into business. So yeah.
Absolutely. So then you spoke about, going, things being kind of like a stepping stone for you, going from one thing to another. Was there ever a time that you kind of, you know, fell off your stepping stone in a sense, or fell back a little bit, took three steps back and it kind of challenged you a little bit?
Oh, I think there've been times in my life when, I don't know if it was taking a step back, but there were times when I fell off, as in I wasn't coping.
Yeah.
I was trying to do too many things, and I don't mean to do too many things. I just have problems saying no. So I was doing too much, and then I actually kind of had to call it quits for a little bit and just went, yeah, I just need to look after my kids. And because, you know, the whole time I'm having babies and looking after babies, you know, that sort of stuff. So, there was a couple of years where I just had to sort of slow down a bit, and then I started up again and then resumed my bad habits of never saying no.
So you've kind of got that personality where you really love to learn, that you're quite curious.
Love it.
Curious. You've got a bit of a creative side to you, and you are quite dynamic, like you move from one thing to another.
Always. I can't imagine. Like, I remember sometimes the experts in business say you should just stick to one thing. That's way the way. That's how, you know, that's how you grow your business and grow a successful business. And my problem is I actually try to listen to the experts and then I fail and then I feel bad about myself. Because
do you listen to podcasts? Super Soul by Oprah?
I subscribe to podcasts, but I don't actually listen to them.
Well, make sure you listen to this podcast because it's going
to
be the best.
I'll listen to this one. It's like I'm terrible because I read gardening books but don't garden, and I watch the tasty videos on Facebook but I don't cook. This is my little secret, you know, business experts say, oh, you know, focus on one thing, and I'm like, I just literally cannot focus on one thing. So we started our business in 1994, which is funny because we just fell into it because when I was at Griffith and we used to hang out at the what was called the ATSI unit back then. That's what we all called them. Yeah, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander unit, Indigenous Education Unit, whatever it was. And we used
they've all got different names now. I mean, QUT, Ujuru, Gamari at Griffith.
Yeah, it wasn't Gamari then, but that's what it is now. And then there'd be these groups of high school kids who'd come to the university and as part of their, you know, work experience or something. And so they'd come and then we would just talk to them about what university was like, and I really enjoyed that, going, oh, you know, this is this and I'm doing this and, you know, that's called that. And, you know, we'd just sort of talk really informally in small groups of people. And then a girlfriend said to me, oh, I'm going to speak at a school. And it was All Hallows, actually. And she said, would you like to come with me and kind of do a kind of, you know, introduction to Indigenous culture kind of thing. And I said, yeah, okay. So we prepped a little presentation and then we went off and did it. And then by the next year, that was our business. And so her and I then, she graduated a bit earlier than me, but I graduated mid-year. I didn't get a job. I actually applied for the, you know, graduate positions and I didn't get a job.
Yeah.
I didn't get a job and didn't get an offer to go to Canberra. All my friends were going to Canberra. But I went to the Tweed instead and started a business. So, and we basically would just literally go in and so someone would say, oh, we need a class on year 6 Aboriginal art, and so we'd do 3 lessons on that, and then we'd have year 11 legal studies, Indigenous perspectives on that, and then year 12 English, and then year 7, you know, tools and weapons. And so we were just kind of going all around the Tweed area, so like between Kingscliff and it was New Northern New South Wales, so we didn't go north and we didn't go into Coolangatta or anywhere, but it was all that northern regions, Northern Rivers area. And we would just go in and teach. And what was great about it was it made me really love teaching and sharing information. That's a big thing for me.
Mm.
But it also, we would have to, I didn't know anything about customary law. When we said, sure, we'll do 4 lessons on that, we would have to go back and research. So we spent that whole 2 years of that business. It was called Nyumba Guri Studies Consultancy. Yep. Hat tip to Annie Pat O'Connor who lent us that name. But we would go in and we would learn about it, and then we would prepare the lessons and we'd deliver it. And then we were basically building up our knowledge and our teaching skills, being in front of a classroom, managing kids and all that kind of stuff. So it was really everything that I do now is an extension of something that I've done in the past.
Mm.
Like, it would be really inauthentic of me. I'm sitting here in this studio and I'm looking at a guy who's got all these in this truck outside the window. Like, if I suddenly became a business owner of tools, like a tools business. Like, that's not, I don't have any relationship with the tools apart from my son who's built a massive toolbox under my house. Like, I don't have any relationship to tools, so it would be really inauthentic. But all of the businesses that we have now, all the different things we do in our business are all just stepping stones. Oh, well, we did this and then we did that project. It was really exciting. We really enjoyed it. And then we moved on to the next one and the next one. So people growl because it's like, Lisa, what are you doing now? I get that a lot. And I'm like, I'm doing everything and it's wonderful.
Okay, well, I want you to take me back to 1988, which is when you began at the Queensland University of Technology doing your Associate Diploma of Arts in the Creative Industries. Obviously, that is a little while ago, probably 33 years ago.
Oh, wow.
But tell me, in retrospect, have you had a chance to kind of sit down and go, you know, what you learned at that very first moment of being in touch with the higher education system, at that time, you know, how what did you learn then that has kind of grown and flourished, or, you know, in the Ujuru ATSA unit, who has become an amazing part of your journey, or maybe at Gomari at Griffith? Yeah. Tell me about the beginning of that higher education journey.
I think one of the things that I'm less concerned about now that I've hit my 50s that I was probably unaware of back then was I've always had a sense of I don't understand what's going on, but I know that what I'm feeling now, and I don't know, I think this is something that started back then and I've gotten really clear about it. So I know that I don't know, but I know that I will know. I just have to learn it. So you know when you're really confused about something, and I think this is one of the, I often talk about the, you know, people who, you know, vote for One Nation, you know, people who are disenfranchised because, or, you know, they're not disenfranchised, but they just, or people who, they, you just sit there listening to them and go, you do not understand how the world works, but they don't realise that they don't know how the world works. Now, so they have no sense of control over their world because all of these things are happening around them and they don't have any sense of, okay, so that's happening because of this system and this, you know.
It's almost like they're living in their subconscious, could you say?
I don't know what it is, but, and I'm not even explaining it very well. Sorry, listeners. But
no.
I know now, and that started back in 1988 and probably earlier, but it's kind of when I became conscious of it, is that, okay, Lisa, it's okay that you don't know this, but you will know it eventually. You will know enough eventually because you just have to learn it, like, and you just have to practice and being comfortable in the not knowing. And I don't know if I've explained
that. No, well, am I right in saying that university, because I feel like this, it kind of taught me how to be critical and how to think analytically and how to look at something not just for the surface of what it is, but to dig a little bit deeper, yeah, and to gain a deeper understanding. And sometimes when you dig beneath the layers, then there's this other layer and then this other layer and then this other layer, and before you know it, you're 100. And, you know, and you've done 50 million things. Which, let me get to that, because you have done an incredible amount of things. You're now an alumni for QUT, but also you are the director at Iscariot Media Proprietary Limited. You're a writer. You've been a writer and publisher for Indigenous Studies and Indigenous Education. You've been a research assistant. You've been a lecturer, also a consultant. You've done stuff for the Melbourne University, Melbourne Business School, just to name a few. But also you're a Murray-Jella. I just have to mention that because you said you don't cook, but I know for a fact that you cook because you are one of the deadly Murray-Jellas on Twitter. So you've done a big lot of things. It's very unconventional because it's not this 9-to-5, I've worked in this position for 25 years type thing. And I feel like in the environment that we are living in today, would you agree in saying that you almost have to have a degree of agility and creativity to be able to navigate your way around this kind of almost, what would you say, post-digital age in a sense?
Yeah. Looking back, my sister has been has worked for government since she graduated, and she's amazing. And I don't think I fully appreciated the work that she did and what it took for her to keep going and doing the work that she does until now, as I have a business where I'm actually trying to build systems and processes and a little mini bureaucracy. Whereas for someone like me, I think I would never have survived. I've never been in a job for more than a year or two. So if you are somebody who is really interested in lots of different things, kind of on the edge of that creative, then I think having a portfolio career where you're doing bits and pieces over time, I think that that's really valuable. You might be a bit more organised than me and maybe do it a little bit more effectively. But, you know, I think it really is possible to have that kind of career. And if you're going to be self-employed, so a free agent kind of thing, I think that it's really possible and really exciting, particularly in this world. And post-COVID, whenever we become post-COVID, the ability to work remotely and work from home and work when you're on the road. I mean, I don't want to romanticise the nomadic kind of life, because it's still complicated and sometimes you just need to be stable in order to get something done. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's a real opportunity, and I have had a portfolio career where I just go, you know, I do this for a little while and then I'll do something else and then we'll do something else.
So, well, after the break, I want to talk to you about what young Lisa uni student Lisa would say to entrepreneur, digital extraordinaire Lisa today?
I think the first thing I was thinking is, are you crazy? I don't know what she would say. I mean, apart from awesome and just keep going.
Yeah.
I think at this age, at 52, I'm thinking about what a less hectic timetable looks like, giving myself room to rest and recover. As I've gotten older, I think is probably the thing that I'm interested in. You know, back in the day, like, I can exist on 4 hours sleep if I need to. You can't do that forever.
It's interesting because they often say that the really successful entrepreneurs and people who have done really well in the business world have almost become comfortable with failing. And when you speak about a journey and you speak about challenges, I even just put it to you before about challenges and you were like, oh, well, you know, everything's kind of a stepping stone. What's your experience with failure?
I think I'm very self-reflective and have a very strong internal locus of control. So if something goes wrong, I go, okay, so what should I have done? What could I have done to have made this better? And so when we have failed on projects, I'm not going to pretend that we haven't. I know that we've had clients who've been dissatisfied and we've done our best, and for 1,000 reasons it's not worked out, but I'll always come back to, well, what should I have done better?
How do you manage those situations when someone comes to you and say, look, Lisa, I wanted this. It was about 80%. And to be honest, I'm just not satisfied.
I usually just own it because I think for me that's, and because, I don't know, because that's who I am. Sometimes it is them, and there's actually, they need to wear some of that failure as well. But that's not in their heads. You go, look, I apologise. You know, we will absolutely try to do better next time. And then quite often you don't have a relationship with them, so it's like it is what it is. But, yeah, no, I generally own stuff and just go, okay, that's it. I'll do better next time. And
okay, well, I'm a young girl. I'm 19 years old. I've just graduated high school. And I, you know, kind of think that business is something that I'm really enjoying. I've got that curious mind. Give me some advice. What do I do? What would you say to that young person?
What would I say? I would say stay open to stuff. Our first business was educational resources. And now last year we built a call centre for the Queensland government. And so it's kind of not the same as educate. Like, where you start is not where you will finish. And that's okay. Like, you know, we built a call centre. I do some work for Facebook. I do all of these different things that have nothing to do with where I started. Theatre, I started in theatre. Like, what even is, I started as a cleaner. What is, like, you know, whatever that starting point is be open to trying new things and be comfortable with not knowing where your future is going to go. So, you know, the example before we were talking about the person who stays in the same job, you know, you don't know that that's going to happen to you. And there are forces out there that, you know, you may go, I really want stability and security. And something can happen, like a pandemic, and suddenly that security and stability that you thought was there and you thought you needed is no longer there. So I think the other part, one of the practical things about that is have some of your personal stuff. You need to work on yourself as well. So I do remember going to I think it was like the 90s, and so we didn't have like a massive business community anywhere in Australia. The chamber hadn't started, and this guy, it's Māori fella, entrepreneur, had come over from New Zealand and was, you know, doing a presentation in the city to, you know, the small community that was there. And one of the, you know, he did a really good presentation. I can't even remember his name and I can't remember where he's from. There's one thing that he said that really stuck with me. Unfortunately, I didn't completely implement it. I'd be much more well off had I. But he said, you really do need to have your personal finances and your personal life sorted before you start in business. You don't have to, but it's nice if you do. So if you have a very, you know, if you think you're going into business because you want to have flash stuff, it's probably not a good reason to do that. Whereas if you say, look, I really want to try this exciting thing and I'm willing to sacrifice flash new clothes and take away coffees every day in order to get that, that's going to serve you well.
Could you actually sort of almost look at your life as a business in a sense?
Absolutely, yeah.
And you always say about business that you should, it's nice to have a bit of fallback money. It very rarely happens, but it's nice to have that fallback.
Or not even if it's not a fallback money, it's not, you don't want to be in debt and go into business.
Unnecessary and then, debt too. Like, I'm going to get a $10,000 loan because I'm 18 and I've been approved.
Yeah, no, don't do that. No. Like, unless it's for something that you think, that you absolutely have to have, like, fine, but everybody and everybody's circumstances are different. But you want to, if you, it's the freedom to be creative and the freedom to explore and the freedom to take risk. And this is why, you know, like, quite often it's the rich kids that make it because they, mum and dad are paying for them. So they, their risk is very minimal. Like, yeah, they might put $1 million on the line, but it's not their money. They're not paying rent, you know, whereas if you're, you need to give your space and freedom to take those risks.
And I suppose that links to my next question, which is about places like the Uluru Unit at QUT and the role that that place plays in providing the access and opportunity that so many other people have. How important do you think these places are, and also, you know, the Indigenous Unit and the other parts of the university that support? And this is not to say that the university system is doing a flash job at dealing with and managing First Nations education at all. I think there's a long way to go.
Mm.
But where are they sort of, are spaces like that important and where can there be improvement?
Yeah, I think that spaces like that are vital, and not so much at Uluru, but certainly at Griffith. The friends that we made, that I made back in 1990, are still my friends.
Yeah, right.
I actually had a missed call from one of them this morning.
Well, there you go.
I think he pocket dialed me. But, you know, these are folks that I met back in the late 80s and 90s. We're all still friends, like, and we all still see each other. And I don't know that my experience, and everybody's different. My, you know, my son went to QUT, but he had a job and he was working. So he went to uni and came home again. So he didn't really have that kind of social experience. But I know for me, we hung out in the ATSI unit and we would play backgammon and smoke three cigarettes and drink tea and eat 20-cent, you know, Tim Tams on When You Were Flash and from the science common room and stuff like that. Like, that's just...
But you also get access to things as well. I know I was part of the Gamari unit at Griffith University. Mm-hmm. And so you get access to, you know, the computers and possibly even a tutor if you need a tutor.
Yeah. I don't know that I would have got through uni without tutors.
Mm,
the tutors were, for me, that, and, you know, it's just, it's my, you know, I'm not embarrassed to say it, but, yeah, I needed those tutors and they helped me to understand. It's funny because I actually went, in the late 90s, I got a job back at Griffith University. My son had just, had him actually, and I got a job at the university and I eventually became a learning assistance officer teaching students how to do write essays. And it was in teaching them how to write essays that I think I finally went, oh crap, that's how you write an essay.
Oh my God, I can completely relate.
Why didn't I know this before?
I can completely relate. I did the exact same thing because they say once you're able to explain it, then you understand it yourself.
Yes. But I finished uni.
Yes.
Like 5 years beforehand. And then I was eventually teaching students how to do oral presentation, how to structure an oral presentation.
And then we like, I just wish I had this knowledge in my head 5 years ago when I was up. Like, I remember my first essay that I ever did. On globalization for international relations.
Yeah.
And it was 500 words and I cried about 3 times because I couldn't get my head around how to structure it. You know, there were all these different ideas around what globalization was. You know, are we more global or are we not? You know, like there are more boundaries up to move into state than ever, or to move from state to state than ever. So, and I just remember crying because I could not conceptualize it. And then
so
I remember
much.
Later on, tutoring someone in it and going, oh, my dear Lord, what was...
I like the idea. I remember one of my first presentations at uni was on power, overt, covert power. It was amazing. And someone helped me with that. Like, I had no idea what to do. But I like, one of the things I do like is frameworks, and I think if you must have had when you were explaining to it, oh, well, this is kind of like the framework for how it
T-E-E,
works.
T-E-E, topic sentence, explanation. No, sorry, topic sentence... explanation and, oh, God, whoa.
Evidence?
No.
I don't know that.
Example.
There you go. Evidence, example could be the same.
And then explanation, explaining. T-E-E. And something so simple made such a difference to
how. I loved the unit.
Yeah.
I loved it. I remember when a group of people, I was the MC at, that's right. I remember that because the graduation events are really flash now, but back in those days we organised the first Griffith Uni graduation ceremony, not the one with all the gowns, the Murray one, and we went and got peas from Red Rooster, big box of chicken. I was at a school hall. I was the MC. A couple of them did some dance, like had been learning dances. It was awesome, and it was, you know, and then someone cooked some rice and chicken, and like, you know, it was a family, and love it was just, it was like, it was exciting.
And when you graduated at QUT and also at Griffith, since then you've been part of, particularly QUT as well, you've been part of a lot of the stuff that they've been doing at QUT. Tell us a little bit about your involvement with QUT today.
Oh, so I've just started at QUT Business School. So I have a part-time position, so 40% position, so 2 days a week, working at the business school and just around Indigenous business and just going, okay, how can we, because business school hasn't traditionally done very much about Indigenous business or not many of the Indigenous. I don't think there are any Indigenous academics. And so I'm in there just to kind of add another voice and say, okay, well, why don't we do this? And I'm really actually really excited, and it's taken me a few months to kind of work out what the role can be. And one of the things I'm really interested in doing is not trying to copy what other universities have done. So Melbourne Business School have the Murrah program, which is awesome. I've done that program. It's fantastic and I highly recommend it. But I don't think QUT needs to have a Murrah. Like, we don't actually need to copy what they've done. What I really want us to do is to find the thing that we're passionate about and go, let's go hardcore into that. So, and just be really narrow. Like, we don't have to do a summer school curtain of doing that. We don't need to do a whole export thing that RMIT are doing. Let's find the thing that we're really passionate about. And one of the things that I'm passionate about at the moment is if we want to meet Indigenous procurement policy targets, which is 3% of, from a lot of them are like 3% of Commonwealth, I think it's 3% or 5% of Commonwealth spend with Indigenous businesses. If we want to meet those targets, we actually have to grow really strong businesses. In order to do that, I actually have to become a better employer. So I'm interested in working out how do we strengthen, and it's really unsexy. So it's not like tech startups and it's not, you know, exports and like, it's nothing sexy about becoming a better employer. Like, but it's the basic stuff. How, if I want to deliver bigger contracts, I need a bigger team. So that means more employees. So I need to become a better employer. What are all the processes? What are the things I need to do in order to do that? And it's, like I say, it's really unsexy, but that's the, and I guess I'm bringing to it where I am at as a business owner. We have 6 employees now. If we got all these contracts, I'd have to have more. But how do I become, I've never managed people before. Like I said, you know, I've not worked in government. I've not worked in big bureaucracies. For the bulk of my career, I've been a sole operator. I was doing little projects while the kids were little and, you know, doing things I was interested in, like when I'd work with a team of two or three people who were subcontractors. So I've never managed staff before and suddenly I have 6 staff. Like, what the hell? Like, I don't know what to do here.
But like you said, like when you started back at QUT back in the 80s, you know, you could have never imagined that you would be here. Like,
you
don't end up where you start. You know, you never know. You could be flying a jet engine in 3 months or 3 years.
Maybe not. My math's not that good. But, maybe not that.
Well, you just never know.
I did do my first modelling shoot.
Yes.
Late last
year. I saw
year,
that.
Which is so bizarre. I'm like, what the hell? Which is why I said yes, because I'm like, this. And this is what I do. I quite often will say yes to the things I don't want to do because it's like, don't want to do it, Lisa? Because you don't belong there, Lisa. Okay, you need to go and do it.
Yeah.
Or I'm not good enough for that, Nat. Go and do it. You know, go and do the things that you're the most scared of. I am not going to don't think I'm going to jump out of a plane. That's for other reasons. But, you know, that's not what I don't want to do that. I don't like horror movies. But, you know, I'll go and do. And so my she's an old school friend, and she said, and, you know, she runs a Merino Country, which is a Merino label here in Brisbane. And she rang me up and she said, would you do this? And I said, and I was just laughing, going, that's ridiculous. Me, a model, of course I'm going to do it, because it was absurd. Like, it's just crazy. And I love saying that. Like,
and by the way, you were looking absolutely stunning in that shoot, my darling.
Get my Kim K.
But this is the thing that you're sort of talking about. You can start in one place, and almost in a sense, if we're talking about this very moment, you've kind of done the full circle. You're back at the place where you learnt how to do the fundamentals and how to, which was to take those leaps and to take those little steps forward. There were absolutely challenges.
And be comfortable with not understanding and not knowing everything.
Yeah.
Because it's like when you teach at uni and it's a 12 or 13 week semester, and the students are freaking out when they see the assessment in week one, and you're like, no, you can't do that because you just started. But by week 4, 5, 6, 7, you'll have a clue. So just settle down. Calm down. You don't know what you're doing because it's only week one. You don't have to learn everything. You're not supposed to know everything before you start. We will learn it over time. So just kind of go with it. Let yourself not know. Be comfortable with that, and then, you know, let the rest happen.
It's been a real pleasure talking to you, Lisa. But before we wrap up, I want to know, when we look at the future and we look forward and we go, you know, and as you said, you kind of just sort of take it as it is. But I want to know if you could
Click your fingers. I'll send you all my
and
stuff.
In 25 years, you could say, I've done this between the age of 50 and the age of 75 or whatever. You know, what are some of the things that you hope to be able to tick off in that period of time?
Wow. Well, I'm walking the Simpson Desert in a couple of weeks at the ultra marathon in the end of
June.
Amazing. So hopefully I'll do that. That's like, you won. I think a few years ago I would have said I want to build the business up so that, well, and I still do, but I'm also kind of, I don't know, the end is getting nigh. And it's not even, like, we're still young. But, yeah, no, I mean, I want to grow a business, and this is the focus of Iscariot these days, which is, so I went for a tender last week that I didn't really need to do. But I was really annoyed because the 7 women who I ended up bringing in on that tender they were too small to. The tender was set up in a way that prevented them from applying for it. So these are 7 Indigenous businesswomen across Queensland who were not able to apply for something that they are overqualified to deliver, and that's their grassroots work, like that's their everyday work. And so they're prevented from applying for that tender because of the way that tender was set up. And so we applied for it. We don't need that work, but I applied for it in order for them to try to have a go at winning this contract so that they can do the work that they're meant to do. And if I can build a business, if at the end of 20 years I can say, well, we built a business that helped other Indigenous businesses or, other communities that need it, help them to build their businesses, then I'll be like, yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, and because that for them, that work is feeding their family. Like, business, I think in our minds sometimes we think business is about flash cars and fancy clothes and styling up and saying how deadly you are on social media.
That can be part of it.
And that's fine. But really for me, business
the fundamentals
is about being useful and finding solutions to problems. Like, that's what we do in business. We go, oh, I think there's a problem over there. I'm going to solve that problem, and here are the resources that I bring to it. It's not about flash cars. It's really about, you know, helping people find solutions, providing answers to questions that you may not be able to do when you are working for a bureaucracy. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with working in institutions and things like that, because they absolutely serve their role and they're really important. But, you sometimes need a little bit of that agility and freedom to try stuff that you wouldn't get away with in those spaces.
Well, Lisa, it's been absolutely fascinating going through your journey in the education system, I guess, or just as a person in general, and learning a little bit about the various different stepping stones that you've gone from, you know, one stepping stone to the other one to land you in modelling and walks and lecturing.
Oh, yes.
And
New York is calling.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank I look you. Forward to having you on and chatting with you again sometime soon.
Awesome. Thanks.
And that was Lisa Wadigo, who is working at QUT. That's part of a podcast that I've been fortunate enough to produce in line with QUT called QUT Yarns. And you can have a look at that particular yarn by jumping on qut.edu.au/about/Indigenous. And you can catch that QUT yarn there. And of course, it's Friday. I'm joining you here today on Let's Talk Murray Country 98.9 FM. You can catch that yarn that I just had with Lisa Wadigo by going to 98.9fm.com.au. And of course, I just mentioned the QUT Yarns podcast that is also over on the QUT page. And today I've started a new tradition. Last week we started the Friday's feature artists. And of course, we spoke to the beautiful, amazing Sue Ray, who released her song on our program. She's just wonderful. And today I've decided to go with an amazing singer that I came across a couple of years ago. I worked with her at the ABC and met her at a conference that we were doing and was absolutely taken away, blown away by her beautiful voice, her presence, her energy. Lauren Ryan joins us here this morning on Let's Talk. Good morning, Lauren.
Yama, hello.
Hi. Before we start, I would like you to get to know you a little bit and can you tell us who your mob is and where you're from?
I'm a Gomeroi girl. I'm a sixth generation Gomeroi person living on country, which is pretty special to me. And I come from Tamworth. Go Tamworth.
Woohoo!
born and raised here. But my second home is Walgett. That's where most of my family's from. But I find myself at home, you know, anywhere on Gomeroi country.
Well, it kind of makes sense, Lauren, that being from Tamworth, that you've kind of gone down the country route a little bit. Your music is beautiful. I love it. Describe it for me. Touch of country, I would say, with some beautiful whimsical pieces in there. Tell us how you'd describe it, though.
Yeah, man. I think it's just an infusion of all the things I love. Like, I'm such a hometown girl, brought up on country. So, I mean, I love me some country, some Keith Urban and Brookston Dunn and Uncle Troy Cassidaly and all the good ones. But I found my voice within soul music and R&B and 90s R&B and early 2000s stuff. So it's an infusion of all the good stuff, all the stuff that has inspired me. I would call it country roots, sort of like, I don't know, Beyonce meets mm-hmm. Chris Stapleton sound. So, yeah.
I like that little crossover. I'd probably concur. I was really fortunate enough to see you perform live at the ABC conference a couple of years ago. Down.
I thought you were going to say I was really fortunate to see Beyonce.
Oh, no.
Well, you're talking about me, of course.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, Beyonce and I are actually really quite close. but I was fortunate enough to see you perform down there, and I thought it was absolutely stunning. One other thing that I really love about the music that you produce, Lauren, is that you infuse language, your local language, Gomeroi language, into it. How important is that, and what kind of got you on that track?
Yeah, I started out singing in language. My first ever gig on stage was singing next to Poppy Reginald. And one of his songs, which was in lingo. When I was in high school, I learned lingo, and my AEA teacher said, you know, you learn the language, keep the language close, and I'll find you a stage. So he sort of linked me in with the right people, and I've built those friendships and relationships and family bonds and kept them strong ever since then. So, I mean, it's really important to me. I didn't grow up knowing language, so when I learned it at high school and learned it through song, which was, I found, a lot easier, you know, I was able to take it home and restore it into my family and teach it to my mum, and now I teach it to my daughter and my nieces and nephews. And
Let's talk a bit about that, sis, because you are actually doing a mentoring program at the moment down there in Tenworth, working with visual and performing arts on those platforms with First Nations people living in the Tenworth area. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah. So the mentoring part of it, I actually work with kids from around the region, like New England, Northwest, New South Wales. And so through my job at Two Rivers, which is a boutique community development company, I work as a First Nations Arts and Culture Development Manager. And one of my jobs is to mentor kids. And amongst those kids are the Castlereagh Connection Boys. Who I'm big proud of. Hey,
Say that again.
The Castlereagh Connection.
Castlereagh Connection. Okay.
Yeah.
Might have to keep a lookout for them.
You need to hear these kids.
I've just penciled that one in. They could be a Friday feature, artist in the future.
Yeah, man. Mm. Yeah, they've got music out there. I mentored them through their first ever studio recording. So they had a couple of songs that they'd written and a couple of cover songs in language that they wanted to do. And so I helped them and their mum, Lisa, who manages them, go through the process of, you know, booking the studio and recording and the production and then the manufacture and distribution and promotion and all that stuff. And so, yeah, they have a brand new EP out called We Will Remember You. So that was a really special thing to help them get their studio sorted and find the right producer and then actually go in the studio with them and sit and hear them record their record. And I played on one of the songs too, which was really fun.
Oh, that's so deadly. I think mentoring, we've mentioned it on Let's Talk before, I'm doing a little mentoring program with the community radio station at the moment with four mentors, Beau and I. And I just think that's so important in our community, you know, given that 50% of our mob are under the age of 21. You know, I imagine that they look up to you similar to, I suppose, people that you've looked up to, like Uncle Roger Knox, you know, the Black Elvis. I imagine he had a massive impact on your life, sis. So mentoring, I think, is such an incredibly important thing. And I think that the infusion of the language as well, I think, is important. It sends that message out about the importance of the revival of our well, I shouldn't say revival, it's still living, right? Keeping that living culture going along. Now, sis, as Friday's feature artist for Let's Talk, you're going to be, you released a song a couple of weeks ago called Flame Trees. Tell me a bit about this, how you produced it, what was behind it.
Yeah, I love this song. I've been a cover artist for so long just to, you know, pay the bills and fuel the dream and put money back into the dream of writing and recording original music and being my own artist. So when I'd go and play these cover gigs, you know, all the drunken punters would sing out requests, and this was one of my favourite ones to do. And one day I just thought, you know, how deadly would it sound in Gomeroi? So I sat down with a linguist that I work with to do my translations, and I had the translation for about a year before I even like sat down and learnt it and worked out the melody and the cadence of the words. And then I recorded just a Gammon video in my music room in last year's lockdown and posted it. And it got a really good response on social media. So I decided to have an actual recording so that people could listen to and, you know, kids could learn and things like that. People showed that they really loved it.
Well, I absolutely love the song, sis. And I admire you as well. I was lucky enough to meet you, as I mentioned, 3 or 4 years ago. You're a single mother. You you do a show on Saturday. You produce a show on Saturday nights on ABC, a country show down there in Tamworth. You also work for Two Rivers community group, working to mentor and build the capacity of blackfellas down in your community. You also do your music on the side, sis. Like so many black women, you are so solid, so strong, and you're just keeping it all together. I really, truly admire you. I think you're a pretty incredible person.
Thank you. I feel lucky to have met you as well. And you've got this really strong presence, and the way you carry yourself and you handle life is inspiring and uplifting for me as well.
So, oh, bless. So look, but while we're being all gooey.
Right back.
Yeah. Well, while we're being all gooey, anyone that listens to Let's Talk knows how much I love my mother and my auntie sis. I mention all the time how important those black matriarchs to me. But today is my mum's 60th birthday, and we're going to go to your song. But before we do, I just want to wish my beautiful, amazing, strong black mother, Louise Wadigo-Coutts, who is just the most incredible human being and has guided me through so much and been such a strong pillar in the community and within our own family, a very happy 60th birthday to my dear mama. We've been celebrating all week, but I'll be going there this afternoon to give her the biggest hug. I'm, you know, the stage 3 clinger daughter that rings her 50 times a day, but she loves it. She told me. No, Gammon. But just wanted to wish her a happy birthday. And also thank you so much for coming on, Lauren. If you've enjoyed listening to us here at 98.9, you can catch the repeat tonight at 7 p.m. or you can jump onto 98.9fm.com.au to upload the podcast a little bit later on in the program to take us out here on Murray Country.